Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke.
I hit a guy on a bike with a door, of a car, not like a door I carry around and be like, stop saving the earth. By accident. I opened the door of my cab and it hit this guy and he started screaming at me and he's like, look where you're going, you broke the law. And I'm like, look where you're going. And we're just sort of yelling and I look down and I see a bike lane. And as he's screaming at me, I look at him and I go, sorry, I was wrong. He was so mad. He was like, no big deal. He had to go home and be like, I met this really nice guy who hit me with a door. It just made me want to cut people off in traffic just to apologize and be like, sorry, that was my fault.
That was a clip from the Comedy Central special, Eugene Merman, An Evening of Comedy in a Fake Underground Laboratory. Merman is a stand-up of note that you may recognize from HBO's Flight of the Conchords, Adult Swim's Delocated, or for his voice work on the animated Fox series, Bob's Burgers. Merman moved to Massachusetts from Moscow with his parents when he was 4 years old. He attended Hampshire College, where he designed a major in comedy. He was named Best New York City Comedian by The Village Voice, one of 50 Funniest by Time Out New York, and one of the 10 Best Comedians of the Last Decade by Paste Magazine. Eugene Merman will perform at the Academy of Music in Northampton, Massachusetts on Saturday, November 30th at 8 p.m., and he joins us now. Eugene Merman, welcome to the Roundtable.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
You went to Hampshire College and created your own major in comedy, and your thesis was a one-hour stand-up act. Do you remember any of the jokes you told in that 1 hour that you made for school?
Yeah, I mean, I remember some of the jokes specifically and then also just a lot of the gist of it.
And was your style, the type of things you wrote about, at all similar to what you do now? Was it you then?
It is in the sense that it's a lot of very similar, conceptually it's very similar, though it's different stuff. But yeah, I mean, I had sort of a lot of weird bits and would do letters and sort of things that were just odd ideas. But I would also tell stories and, you know, have short jokes. It was sort of a mix of things. I kind of developed in, you know, at college where there weren't really comedy clubs, so I would just try things, and if they worked, they would become my act. And so that sort of ethos has always stayed with me.
When you decided to make your comedy major at college and then set out on this career, what did you hope would happen? Did you have any specific goals?
I didn't have specific goals. I mean, my specific goal had always been to just do comedy in mm-hmm. some context. So I never knew exactly what it meant. And the thing is, things have changed so much with the amount the internet has advanced and the types of things that you could do that I feel like even if I had had some sort of very specific goals, like half the channels that I'm on now didn't exist at the time.
Right. Who were some of the people that inspired you to pursue a career in comedy?
Emo Phillips was someone that I adored. There's a comedy team from the 60s that did sort of these brilliant street pranks called Coyle and Sharp that were really incredible. Bobcat Goldthwait, Steve Martin.
And how did Emo Phillips and the street group and Steve Martin and the like come across your radar? Were your parents into comedy, or was it something you sought out
on
your own?
No, I mean, I was born in Russia, so when we came here, they didn't know about, you know, the American stand-up comedy scene.
Right, no, I guess they didn't.
But comedy was very, very popular in the 80s. So I think the way it came across me is that either friends would share it, or I would see it on television, or see a record or tape in a store and get it. Like, The Cosby Show was really popular, and I had lots of Bill Cosby cassettes. So I was into stand-up comedy, you know, probably from 4th, 5th, 6th grade.
And did you listen to it over and over again to the point where you memorized Bill Cosby's bits?
Yeah, and everyone's. Yeah, I mean, I would listen to these tapes over and over.
But your style is, of course, very different. How do you suppose that influence works, that you discover stand-ups, listen to people a lot, but then what you can joke about, what you will write about, is so different from what inspired you? It's true for, you know, everybody working, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think that a lot of it is, there's, you know, broad things that from each of these people you know, from Emo Phillips, probably an appreciation, and Stephen Wright, an appreciation of sort of short one-liners, absurd things. You know, Bill Cosby, you know, is very much a storyteller. So I think that there's different things from different, you know, people that end up influencing you, but you end up sort of merging it as your own thing.
You celebrated or presented the 6th annual Eugene Merman Comedy Festival this past September in New York. That festival started as sort of a joke.
Yes, it started sort of as a joke between me and a few friends, and then we basically decided to do it. And then it turned out that it was really fun, so we just kind of kept doing it. And, you know, this last year also did it in Boston,
right,
and are slowly growing. But yeah, mostly it's just these two venues in Brooklyn, and it's mostly just a thing that we do with friends.
How do you decide what the themes of the shows will be?
A lot of it is sort of what's funny to us, plus what seems like who's around and what seems like a realistic thing we could do.
I saw the one this year was called Comics That Marc Maron Will Resent Over the Next Few Years. And just the title of that cracked me up.
Yes.
Do you know if he knows that you called it that?
And he definitely knows it, and I think he thought it was funny.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Yeah, I reached out to him to just see if he would care. And, I mean, I think he thought it was funny.
You recently toured with Kristen Schaal and John Hodgman on the Merman Hodgman Schaal Sandwich to Go tour. Did you have fun on the road with those guys?
Yeah, it's very fun. I mean, a lot of sort of the stuff I end up doing is, you know, whether it's touring or television, is just various projects with friends.
Mm-hmm.
And that's always very fun to do.
It was funny, the press release for that tour, or the blurb on a website, has the way that the three of you are connected. But, you know, like, Kristen Schaal and Eugene Merman are both voices on Bob's Burgers, and Kristen Schaal and John Hodgman are both on The Daily Show.
I mean, and the truth is, we've all known each other for over a decade.
Of course.
You know, and we've all done countless shows and things together in New York and beyond.
When did you start playing the theremin?
Playing is such a strong word, but thank you for using it.
Sure.
I guess three years ago or so when I bought it, maybe four.
And what inspired the purchase?
I have always wanted to do, I mean, I probably spent years thinking that I, like, wanting to sort of do jokes with a theremin, but it always seemed silly to buy a theremin to try this thing.
Uh-huh.
And then at some point, I think I was like, well, I just should do it. And then I got to do that bit at Carnegie Hall, you know, a few years ago, and also, obviously, on a special on TV. So it ended up being worth it. But you don't really know when you buy something as silly as a theremin if it's going to work.
Did you compare shop, price compare, and quality compare different theremins?
I think what I got was a very, very good theremin in the sort of standard of theremin. But I don't know if you ever tried to buy a theremin, but all
no,
places,
no.
You either put it together or you have only a few choices. There aren't a lot of theremins at Best Buy. But yeah, I got a very good, very solid theremin made of beautiful wood and theremin parts.
This is an impression of, this is me talking to an alien and explaining gay marriage to an alien, the debate in America. The alien is from a planet of 8 genders, and it takes any 3 genders to make a new being. So just the idea of marriage, gay marriage, the whole thing is culturally very confusing, this alien. And he got to Earth a week ago, and we're roommates. And we're shopping at Marshall's for home goods. Like roomies do. So this is me talking to the alien about gay marriage. Well, marriage is when two people love each other so much that they promise that if they ever, ever stop, they'll fill out tons of paperwork. Well, most states only allow it to be between a man and a woman because of the Bible. It's basically a really old, weird self-help book. Yeah, I don't know who buys those giant jars of marinated peppers. We could get pajamas.
Do you aspire to use it to the height of theremin, you know, capability? Do you want to be a very good player? Or is it for the jokes?
No, I mean, there's two different questions. One is theoretically, would I want to be able to play a theremin? Well, sure.
Okay.
But I'd also love to be able to sing or play guitar, but those things won't really happen.
Okay.
I got it to do a joke, but I can't, theremin in general is a very hard instrument to actually play, like where you repeat notes at a particular time in a song.
Of
and
course.
I can't possibly do that. I mean, unless I dedicated years of learning. And maybe wasn't tone deaf.
Are you literally tone deaf?
I don't know, because I never went to like a music doctor, but
okay.
I'm very terrible at music.
Okay. The first time I saw you use it, and then I recently watched the special again, and you use it, as you said, in your most recent hour long, and you look like you're having a lot of fun with it. So that
I
is
adore
working.
It.
Great.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I love doing it. It's super fun. I just, you know, if I thought of another joke or I might use it, you know, in some other context on my next record, you know, I wouldn't not use it, but I don't know that I would necessarily tour with it in the same way.
Okay. You are, as I did just mention, the voice of Gene on Bob's Burgers, which
mm-hmm.
is a show that I love, and you're in the fourth season of the show, but I understand that it sort of took a while to get off the ground.
Yeah, well, I mean, really with anything, you just don't know what will happen. So, you know, we worked probably for a few years on the 8-10 minute pilot, and then we found out that it got picked up, and then it sort of, and then, you know, we waited to find out if there'd be a second season, and there was, and then, you know, we very anxiously waited for a third, and so, you know, now we're in the fourth season and a fifth has been picked up, but you really never know what, you know, what'll happen, and the, you know, the decisions are so big and out of our control, but it's certainly, I love doing the show, and it's so fun doing, like working with friends and, you know, getting to improvise and sort of all hang out in the studio. So it's something that we adore doing, and I certainly adore doing. But, you know, beyond that, I don't know.
How does improvisation for an animated show work?
Well, it's very easy because the voices are recorded before the animation.
Well, that will make it pretty simple,
that's
I guess.
The way. Basically, we record the voices. And even sometimes, as they're animating it, there's little things you can do, you know, when you go back in. But mostly it's that they edit all the audio first.
There's, of course, scripts too, but you get...
We read each scene several times. We're in the studio at the same time, both in New York and L.A., where all of us are acting together. And everyone's doing all the scenes together, mostly. And so you read the scenes as written, and then we also get to improvise, and then they cut it all together into 22 minutes.
Well, I hope that for as long as you all want to keep doing it, it keeps going, the powers that be
yes.
permit it to. And I thank you very much for joining us this morning.
Thank you very, very much for having me.
Eugene Merman will perform at the Academy of Music in Northampton, Massachusetts on Saturday, November 30th, and at Spaceland Ballroom in Hamden, Connecticut on December 5th. There's more information on our website, wamc.org.
I moved recently, and I moved my cable and internet and phone service, which was all provided by Time Warner Cable, and I made a plan with them where they'd come sometime between summer solstice and winter solstice, and I would wait, where they'd come between 10 and 5 or whatever it is, and then at like 5 o'clock at the end of the time they were supposed to come, I called them, and I was like, hey, where are you guys? And they're like, oh, yeah, we entered the information wrong, so we're coming in 2 weeks. I was like, that's terrible news. And they're like, yeah, we're a terrible company. So 2 weeks later, I'm calling them every few hours. I'm like, where are you guys? And they're like, oh, we're coming. We promise. Who would do this twice? And I'm like, I don't know. And like, and I keep calling or whatever. And they're like, no, we're on the way. And then I call and they're like, ooh, the technician tried calling your cell and went to voicemail. So we're coming in 2 weeks again. I was like, I don't like you at all. You're a terrible company. You don't even function by the rules of capitalism. You don't see money as a reward. I don't know how to work with you. And I was like, I could write them an angry letter and be like, you're terrible. And they just put it in their pile of angry letters that they laugh at before they go to sleep or whatever they do. And I was like, I'm so annoyed. And I was like, what can I do? And so what I realized was that I could write an angry letter, but instead of mailing it to them, I would just buy full-page ads in New York newspapers. So that's what I did.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.